The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the ShopTapes.com studios.
It's a great Monday. Thanks for being with us, Brad Sesmat, Sports360AZ.com on AZ Central. Good to be partnered up with the Arizona Republic, White Mountain Radio across the great state of Arizona. And, of course, on Twitter at Brad Sesmat. Today, on remote, on and about, I'm actually at the Phoenix Country Club. This is not a place that you just kind of wander on into. In fact, if you come here, you're not going to get to where I am. That's just the way it is today. I'm at the Phoenix Rotary 100 Salvation Army Second Century Golf Classic. Very good group of people. Wells Fargo, Supima Cotton, want to thank them right off the top for inviting me to come on out here. Why not? It's opening day, and the game's not till tonight. You know, Major League Baseball sometimes can't figure themselves out. We had an opening day a week and a half ago in Australia. We had an opening day yesterday in San Diego. We have an opening day today in Pittsburgh and in Cincinnati or wherever. And then tonight we have an opening day here in Arizona around the Diamondbacks. So for the fourth opening day, I said, you know what? I'm going to go do something on the charity end. It's great to be out with the Rotary folks and the people here at Phoenix Country Club and with the Salvation Army as well. And so we're going to have some fun over the next couple of hours doing our thing. Greg Hansen is going to join us, AZ Daily star, lead columnist. He was there watching U of A lose on Saturday night. I couldn't have seen a more poorly officiated game at the end. Of course, the ASU fans were all excited because ASU is a football school. Arizona State is not a basketball school. The next time that ASU basketball does anything remotely close to the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight, get back to me. So the ASU fans were immediately piling on, saying, go Kitty Cats and all that nonsense, to which I said, yeah, U of A knows they're not a football school. Their football team doesn't do anything. The next time they get to the Rose Bowl will be the next time they play UCLA in October. They're never in the Rose Bowl, right? And so the ASU fans love this. I get it, ASU fan. You don't care about basketball. So you immediately pile on their basketball program. But I would say to you, it's pretty cool going through March Madness. Eric did a terrific job. Jared did a terrific job all around the March Madness end of things. I really appreciate the support of our friends over at Santan Ford and the Arizona Ford dealers and Gateway Airport, too. We had a good time with that. Paula Bova News and Notes will come up in about a half hour. Always good to chat with columnist Paula Bovin with AZ Central, my friend. We'll talk with Paula. But in between our guests, we've got a lot that's on my mind in the world of sports. Jared, do we have a Facebook question today? Jared Cohen and I talked before the show started today about some stuff. Did you even bother to put a Facebook? And is it U of A related again?
It is U of A related. I probably should have gone the opening day route. But you know,
How many U of A questions can you put together? Do you realize the audience, for the most part, could care less about the U of A now that basketball is over?
Do you want me to change it?
Can you do anything opening day related?
I can change it. You want me to change it?
No.
I'll go off the top of my head right now.
What did you come up with to start the show?
Do you deem the 2013-14 season a success despite the abrupt exit in the Elite Eight? That was my question.
Oh, no, we don't care.
I don't care either. I don't know why I said it.
The Cats are done.
I don't care either.
Of course you care.
I don't even care about the answer to the question. Okay. I don't care what anyone has to say.
Let's be honest about this.
I'll be honest. Okay. I was under the gun.
No,
feeling the pressure.
Stop. Don't try to talk your way out of it. You're the one that comes up with these questions because Eric's off today. Eric would have had something about the Diamondbacks today. You, because you dress your kids in U of A clothes and you wear your red, white, and blue when they're playing, of course you're, and you put it on Facebook for all the world to see, of course you're going to have a U of A question today.
Well, this wasn't even a positive U of A question. So if I was so concerned about the U of A stuff, then I would have avoided this question altogether, wouldn't I?
Hey, so let's just bomb your question.
Let's bomb it, and let me give you a new question off the top of my head. As the Diamondbacks start there,
because your question blows. So let's just work on this together. It's opening day for the Diamondbacks. Over or under 82 wins? How's that for a question today?
Great question.
Over or under 82 wins for the Diamondbacks?
Go to facebook.com/sports360az and see the updated question.
There you go. Thank you very much. That's how the show rolls. let's get you caught up on some things on my mind in the world of sports. It's brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino in the beautiful White Mountains just outside of Pine Top. Who wouldn't want to be at Pine Top this time of year at the Honda Resort and Casino? You get away from it all around the great state or wherever you're taking our show in. I'm sitting here at one of the most beautiful locations at the Phoenix Country Club. All these golf carts lined up ready to roll on out. But I tell you, the Honda Resort and Casino, it's right there. You're up in the White Mountains. You can pull down the slot, eat some great food, have some fun. Just outside of Pine Top, that's the Honda Resort and Casino. So I could start with the Diamondbacks and it being opening day. I could start with the Suns absolutely playing one of their worst games of the year last night. The Lakers didn't have Paul Gasol or Steve Nash, right? But the Lakers did have last night, let me see, who did they have? They had Jordan Hill. They had Chris Kaman. They had Kent Bazemore. They had Jordy Meeks, and they had Kendall Marshall in their starting lineup. Let's see, off the bench, they threw at the Suns, Wesley Johnson, Nick Young, Ryan Kelly, DNP, Steve Nash, nerve root irritation, Paul Gasol, DNP, vertigo, which means Paul didn't want to play because he was afraid he was going to fall over, get run over. So I could go with opening day and be very positive and happy because it's the Diamondbacks, and I probably should go that way, but I just want to just beat on the Suns unmercifully for a horrible performance when here they are this close to the postseason and trying to get into a playoff berth and playing one of their worst games in the Jeff Hornacek era. Here is Hornacek after last night's loss. Not the time of year for lessons on the court.
I don't know if we had a single guy that came with the energy that they usually have. I think it's too late in the season to talk about lessons because we've had games like this before where they haven't, they think they're just going to come up, show up, and win a game. We're not good enough to do that.
And I really like the fact that Jeff Hornacek is not one of these guys who's going to roll on out there and say, well, we just didn't play well tonight and sugarcoat it. Because I don't think you guys want sugarcoating. I don't want to see on social media all these interns saying, go Suns, root for the Suns, and getting it retweeted by the Suns. You know, let's not play games here. You were horrible last night. And it's just an awful performance out of the Suns. Now, can they get back into it? We'll see. Their next game is on Wednesday against the Clippers. We're down to the final few. Right now they're tied for a playoff spot. If the playoffs were to start today, they'd be the seventh seed against Oklahoma City. But clearly one of their worst games of the year. I'll take a break here and get Greg Hansen on the other side. AZ Daily Star lead columnist. Want to talk to Greg about the Diamondbacks opening day because he does follow them a little bit. But more importantly, the view of what happens next in Tucson because the U of A had a terrific run, but they're going to lose quite a few players. I want to talk to him, too, about the view of the end of games. Guys, the end of the game the other night, I was at a party. It took at least 15 minutes to play the final minute of that game, and that's painful for fans to watch. We'll talk with Greg Hansen next. At the Second Century Golf Classic, the Phoenix Rotary 100, and Salvation Army at the Phoenix Country Club, I'm Brad Sussmat, Sports 360 AZ. AZ Central Sports, good to partner up with the Arizona Republic, White Mountain Radio, and on Twitter.
For original, in-depth Arizona sports news you care about, follow us on Twitter at Sports 360 AZ.
Sports 360 AZ, AZ Central Sports, White Mountain Radio on Twitter. Brad Sussmat today from the Phoenix Country Club, Phoenix Rotary 100, Salvation Army, Second Century Golf Classic. Appreciate good folks inviting us out from the Rotary and Salvation Army to be involved in this. It is opening night. The Diamondbacks play tonight. It's like the fourth opening day for Major League Baseball. It used to be opening day was a huge celebration. It's going to be a huge party tonight at the ballpark, and that's fine. The Diamondbacks have the second cheapest ticket price, according to Team Marketing Report. Beer prices at Major League Stadiums are flat. The average price for a beer is $6. The Dog and Sausage Council says the Dodgers will sell the most hot dogs, followed by the Rangers, Red Sox, Yankees, and Indians. If the Dodgers don't play well, they will sell dogs because they'll play like dogs. It's a big number they have for their payroll there. But I am excited for opening day. I just kind of wish it was all encompassing in one. I'm also of the opinion that as I was watching Saturday night's U of A game at the end, they still might be playing and they still might be turning around monitors. was it irritating to you as it was to me, the endless run there of trying to get the call right? And I don't know the exact time. Perhaps our next the next voice you hear will know, and that's Greg Hansen, lead columnist, AZ Daily Star. It's always good to have Greg on the show. You can follow him at G Hansen, H-A-N-S-E-N 711 for a couple of minutes on Twitter following U of A elimination on Saturday night. And I don't want to sound whiny off the top. I probably do. Greg, I appreciate you coming on. But what did you make out of just the replay and the endless run there of time off the clock for fans?
Boy, I'm almost used to it by now, aren't you, Brent?
I mean, I should be, Greg, but in a game of that magnitude where it's now sifted down to the college level, and I was wanting Sean Miller to say he touched the ball. I was wanting him to scream it. Just anything.
You know, as luck would have it, my seat was about 10 feet from Miller, and his eyes were bulging. I thought maybe the eyes were going to come out of his sockets. He was so angry. And after the game, standing in the hallway outside the coach's locker room there by the U of A dressing room, you could hear him through the wall, through the cinder block walls. And you talk about being upset that he touched the ball last year. He was more upset Saturday night. And just he once he got in public, he didn't express himself.
Well, that's why a guy like you is so valuable to come on the air and to share that, because if you were to take the fans behind the scenes of that game, what needs to be said that wasn't said or written? Because it was an instant classic. Okay, I'm going to give it that. And this is not me whining about officiating from top to bottom. U of A lost to a team that was just a little bit better than them by a fingernail. If they played each other 10 times, it'd be 5-5 maybe. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But what needs to be said about Saturday night?
I think that an official shouldn't make a call in the last 5 seconds of a game like that, unless it's unless a guy commits Harry Carey on somebody. I one of my golf buddies who I play with all the time is a Pac-12 official who just finished the Sweet 16 game last weekend, and I asked him this morning, and he goes, "Nick fouled him, but I don't think I would have called it in that situation." But I watched that replay about 12 times on video yesterday, and even the 12th time I couldn't tell if he fouled him or not. So, I mean, do you really make a call then that decides the game?
Yeah, you swallow your whistle. I was in a public place with I would say 70% U of A folks, and I don't think there was anybody that agreed with that call. And, yeah, fans are going to be that way, but the ones that are really objective, and I talked to an official yesterday as well, said that's where you swallow your whistle. You have to swallow your whistle on that call. But to sum it up, is it a disappointing season that it goes the way it did, or was this a year that you look at from the standpoint of looking at the body of work of Sean Miller and his program and say, what a terrific year considering you lose Brandon Ashley and you still are able to get all the way down to the Elite Eight?
I think what you said last works for me too. The body of work, and there's still so much ahead based on the roster they're projected to have in the coming years that The only part that lingers is now Sean Miller going to be the best coach who's never got to the Final Four? And you know how hard it is to get to the Final Four. What if he doesn't get there? I mean, you could have a team this good every year and not get there. So until the day they actually win that Elite Eight game, there's going to be a lot of extra juice in all of the games just because of Miller's reputation now.
Greg, and we're talking with Greg Hansen, Arizona Daily Star lead sports columnist, for a couple of minutes with Brad Sussmat, Sports 360, AZ, AZ Central Sports, going to be partnered up with the Republic, White Mountain Radio, and on Twitter. You can follow Greg at ghansen711. Do you look at Sean Miller, Greg, and wonder in this day and age of coaches, is he going to be one of those guys that starts getting pursued, or I know he's already been pursued, to leave Tucson and maybe look at the NBA at some point? What's your feel on that?
I think he'd turn his head at Ohio State more than any other job out there. He's such a private guy. I don't think he would be willing at some point to go to Duke or North Carolina when Roy Williams or Coach K leaves. Same situation at Kentucky. He makes about as much as you can make here, and he can recruit almost as good as anybody but the top three schools. I think he'll stay here, except Ohio State. I think that's the one job that would appeal to him, because you're not in a fishbowl there because of the football program, and he knows you can recruit at Ohio State as well as anywhere, and it's close to his home. To me, that's the job that I'd worry about if somebody, if Thad Mata leaves.
But no NBA.
I can't see that. He's a college guy all the way. But then, you know, Brad Stevens goes to the NBA, so, and I would have said the same thing about him. So, you know, my guess is he's a college guy, but that'd probably be proven wrong at some time, too.
But, so, okay, so we're looking at the coach. Now let's look at the players in the NBA, because everybody's focused on Aaron Gordon's future. When does he announce his intentions? Is it today? Is it tomorrow? When's that coming down from your view?
I bet it's this week. I think he just wants to take a couple of days so it doesn't look like he's an ingrate. But, you know, he's obviously going to know it. I mean, he doesn't have an offensive game at all. He can't shoot at all. But he's such an athlete. And I think he is so eager to go 24-7 learning how to shoot with some NBA people directing him. I just think there's obviously no way he's coming back. The real key is if Rondae Hollis Jefferson somehow gets the notion in his head that he's going to go, that would wreck the whole. That would wreck all the momentum if he leaves.
You wrote earlier this year about Scott. You ran into Scottie Pippen, and that Scotty saw a little bit of himself in Aaron Gordon. Steve Kerr the other night in the broadcast said that Aaron Gordon reminds him a little bit of Sean Marion. There's been some other, I've heard Blake Griffin being compared to Aaron Gordon being compared to Blake Griffin. From your point of view, you've seen this kid. Who does he remind you of?
He doesn't remind me of anyone who's played in the Pac-12 at all, just because of his lack of shooting skills. I was kind of caught off guard, and maybe not shocked, but as I saw him in November and December, I just couldn't believe he had been such an accomplished high school player, an AAU player, without ever learning how to shoot even a foul shot. He shot 42% from the foul line, which is the lowest in school history. And as far as I could find, the lowest in Pac-12 history for a starter. How does that happen? And can an NBA coaching staff and all their development people, can they teach him how to shoot 60%?
Well, and I thought as the season went along out in San Diego, he wasn't on the floor at a couple crucial junctures of the game because it was evident you can't have him out there. And that the free throw shooting had become that big of an issue. Over to Hollis Jefferson, though, is it him getting the idea in his head, or do you think that there's enough people that have already surrounded him and said, look, just go get your clock ticking in the NBA, get that second contract, you're nowhere near close being ready. I fear up here that kid like Jahi Carson is going to be bumping around buses in Italy and Israel in the next few years if he doesn't have it all put together right. And the same thing could be for a kid like Hollis Jefferson. You and I know he's a terrific-looking talent as a freshman, but he's nowhere near ready to go.
Bingo. He's got the measurables, though, that Jahi doesn't have. And in the last 10 games of the season, he really emerged as a player who you could see went from an undrafted guy to a maybe a late first rounder just on his potential, but he doesn't have shooting skills either yet. You know, last year this time, Grant Jarrett jumped. He's nowhere near the player prospect Hollis Jefferson is. And I just looked this morning, Grant Jarrett had an 18-minute game for the Tulsa 66ers, making $29,000 a year. I mean, Rondae Hollis Jefferson has never had a dime. Came from a poor part of Chester, PA, with a single mom. Maybe $29,000 to him looks like $1 million.
Well, let me turn this one around on you. So I talked to some NBA people about Nick Johnson, and I'm sure you've heard the same thing, but they've said mid-second round pick. I look at Nick Johnson and say, there's intangibles there that I would want on my team. That seems a little low to me. Again, it's all measurables, not stuff. You can't measure what he brings to the court. Where are you at on Nick Johnson in the next level?
I like your comment about his intangibles. That's what he has going for him, I think, and, of course, his athleticism. He's sure not a pure shooter. He had difficulty getting off shots against Wisconsin, especially down the stretch when they needed him to get one off. To me, that's the hang-up with him, is that he just isn't a scorer. And you know, he gets so many of his points in the college game, driving inside and just jumping over people, and they can't match up with him athletically. But in the NBA, they'll just knock it back in his face, won't they?
Sure, sure. But I think as in a role, if you're a role guy, you can have a nice long run if you can do some things on the defensive end and you're heady and you're smart and you're tough and you're not. The other night when you go, a lot of guys, Greg, go 0 for 10, and they're done. They're finished. And for me, that was a character statement, his game in the Sweet 16. And to any NBA guy that would say, I want that guy on my team because he competed all the way to the end of the game. He didn't hang his head, didn't have bad body language that I saw for a moment.
You know, about 10 days ago, I was watching an NBA game, Oklahoma City Thunder, and I noticed that Andre Roberson from Colorado was playing a lot of minutes in that game. And last year at this time when he declared for the draft, I went, he can't play in the NBA. And here he is. He started that night for the Thunder because of an injury, and he's playing in the NBA, and I would have never guessed it. So if he can play in there, I think Nick Collison can too.
Before I let you go, a couple other questions with Greg Hanson, Arizona Daily Star. Before I let you go, the class that's coming in, and I've seen two of those kids roll through here in the Valley on the high school level and one up at Finlay. Does the staff believe that they will have a better team next year than the one they had this year?
If Paulus Jefferson comes back, I think they know that they can, that they'll be one of the four or five teams that could win the national title going into the season next year. Stanley Johnson, who is their top recruit, is as good as anybody they've ever recruited, I think. And then now they have that 7-foot kid from Serbia, who's probably like Frank Kaminsky of Wisconsin, who can stand out there and shoot those stretch four three-pointers all night. So they've got pieces, and they've got the number one scorer, junior college combo guard, coming in. They'll be deeper next year than they were this year.
What are you hearing over on football? I know you've been running around. Do you have a quarterback in place yet down there?
I'm guessing Jesse Scroggins, who began at USC 4 years ago, will be their one-year wonder this year. At least they hope he's a one-year wonder. It's kind of an underwhelming quarterback battle right now, and if he doesn't win it, I think they're in a spot of trouble.
Let you go off that. Appreciate your insight as always, Greg. Thanks.
Thank you, Brad. See you later.
Later. It's Greg Hanson with us for a couple of minutes. AZ Daily Star lead columnist. Appreciate his time and insight from Tucson at GHanson711. Polarizing guys. People are just, why are you having him on? Oh, he's this U of A guy. Oh, he doesn't like ASU. And blah, 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 blah. Relax. Relax. Look, ASU fan, you haven't had a game in a couple weeks, okay? They were all the way to the Elite Eight. But very interesting, though, about how Sean Miller not having his team get to the Final Four. Appreciate Greg Hanson. On the other side, Paula Bovin, News and Notes, my friend, the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports columnist, Paula Bovin, on the other side. She was at the Elite Eight. It's also opening day for the Diamondbacks. As we continue on, we are at the Phoenix Country Club, the Phoenix Rotary 100, and the Salvation Army Second Century Golf Classic. Brad Sussmat for the Sports 360 AZ, AZ Central Sports, White Mountain Radio, and on Twitter, at Brad Sussmat.
For unique angles, content, and guests, check out our podcast center, available 24/7, 365, at sports360az.com. Giving you the inside slant on the weekend's biggest stories. It's time for News and Notes with AZ Central Sports columnist, Paula Bovin. Here again, Brad Sussmat.
Paula Bovin, News and Notes. Always good to be with Paula at the Phoenix Rotary 100 Salvation Army Second Century Golf Classic here at the Phoenix Country Club. Appreciate the Phoenix Country Club having us out doing our thing. Lead columnist Paula Bovin, News and Notes now. Coming off of the Sweet 16 and the Elite 8 out in Anaheim, what struck you most, good or bad, about the whole event out there?
I thought the whole weekend are you talking about?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
Going to Luby's at 2 in the morning. I don't care.
No, you know, two things struck me. One, the earthquake. That rattled me. But more important, just it was indicative of what a great NCAA tournament this has been. I mean, you look at the Arizona-Wisconsin game going into overtime, last second shot, and it seems like every time we turn on the TV this tournament, there's that kind of game or some dramatic comeback or things like that. That's what jumped out at me more than anything this weekend.
Where were you when the earthquake hit?
I'm embarrassed to say I had fallen asleep. I was watching the Kentucky-Louisville game and had dozed off briefly, and it just shook me right out of bed. I mean, literally, I popped up. My heart was jumping because I knew exactly what was happening at that time. It just, and it seemed like it was such a long earthquake. You know, I've been through quite a few because I lived in L.A. for years, and this one just felt like it went forever to me.
Yeah, and you were in a hotel or just a house? Or?
No, I was in a hotel on the 15th floor of the Marriott with about 1,200 cheerleaders who were in town for some big competition. So there were a lot of screams and yells right after that earthquake. It was pretty funny.
Should there have been a lot of screams and yells on the foul that was called on Nick Johnson? Is that a spot where the whistle should have been swallowed in the remaining seconds?
You know, I'm not so much the person who says you don't call a foul at the end of the game versus one you might call early in the game. I just don't buy that. It's either a foul or it's not. The thing I question, when I watched the replay, it sure looked a lot like that guy leaned into Johnson and committed the foul before Johnson kind of came back with the elbow. So I had more of an issue with the foul technically versus when it was called. I mean, I don't think it was clear cut, and I don't have a big issue with the official who's, you know, been doing this for a lot of years and is pretty respected. I think it was Tony Green. But I was surprised when I looked back on the replay. I really thought the guy kind of leaned into him and committed the foul.
How about the fingernail tip? And the game is delayed for essentially, I don't know if it was 10 minutes, 12 minutes, but the replay after replay after replay. For me, Paula, I was not there. Eric was there doing the thing. I was in a party in Houston, and all I heard were fans saying, get on with it, get on with it. And I don't know, when the NCAA or pro sports or the NFL, they get so insulated into, well, it's our brand, and we have to get it right and all that stuff. The average fan was getting mad and irritated that it took forever to see if it was a fingernail or not. How about that play from where you sat from the time that it took?
Yeah, you know what? It didn't bother me because it was an important moment. And again, they did want to get it right, and they have the technology for the most part to do that. So I know I heard some people even at the court side where I was sitting had that same issue, but I would rather delay it a little bit and get it right so that the game is fair than not do it. I didn't have a problem with that.
News and notes, Paula Bobin, AZ Central sports columnist with Brad Sussmath for a couple of minutes as we broadcast today from the Phoenix Country Club. I'm wondering your view. I can't find anybody who thinks that Aaron Gordon is ready to go to the next level. I had Greg Hansen on earlier in the show and said to Greg that Steve Kerr referred to Aaron Gordon as a Sean Marion type of player. Did you see that out of Aaron Gordon in your covering?
Oh, yeah. We, in fact, a lot of us have been sort of talking about there's a lot of Sean Marion-like similarities with him. You know, is he ready? No, he's not ready, but it shouldn't stop him from going. Most of the people that are going in the draft these days aren't ready. I mean, people are talking about him now as moving up to maybe a top five pick, you know, and he's done that during the course of the season. And this is the system we've created with college basketball, with the NBA. People can make themselves eligible for the NBA after a year, and the NBA is hungry to get these guys, and they know they have to groom them a little bit. And, you know, we see it even happening with the Suns, but they believe that there's such a great upside that they take the chance. So is he ready? No, he'd benefit from another year in college. But if you can be a number five pick and make that kind of money and have a great, you know, life. And I think he will be successful in the NBA because I think he's a very committed kid with a great work ethic, a great attitude, willing to do whatever he needs to help his teammates, willing to play defense, listens to instructions. So in that regard, I think he's very ready.
Who was the most impressive player that you saw in person over the last couple of weeks?
It was Aaron Gordon. I mean, because I had seen him early in the season and I at times I was almost wondering what the hype was about. You saw the athleticism and the raw talent, but I think he had made such great strides. And to see him play defense, and, you know, I talked to Luke Walton about this about a week ago. Walton described it as his motor never stops. And to see Aaron Gordon play defense sort of right in front of you and the effort he puts in and the commitment to it, and because he's so athletic, what he can prevent other teams from doing it, guard, at center, you know, all these things, unless you're maybe a 7-foot Wisconsin center. He was the most impressive person I saw. Although, I was pretty impressed with what I saw from Wisconsin, too, especially Kaminsky.
Yeah. When you're around a program like Arizona, and when we touched on this just a little bit last week, this isn't meaning to bash on ASU's program, but is there a decided difference in just the whole way that a program carries itself like U of A when you're around them versus what is going on in Tempe, and does that need to change from your view?
There's definitely decidedly difference. When you are regularly attracting the top recruits year after year, you can carry yourself as a team that is confident and feels like it's going to win and doesn't have to get defensive about stuff and everything else. And yeah, it's such a successful program. You know, the ASU-UA comparisons will never end, and I think ASU is going to be in a no-win situation for a long time because there is just momentum in Tucson that it's impossible to compete with. I mean, you know, ASU had a pretty decent season. They got into the NCAA tournament, but they are not recruiting at all in the same neighborhood as Arizona. Arizona just, it's not one star player. It's a lot of star players. And that's just, I don't know if it's going to change anytime in the near future, because I think what UA has is rare. And when you're in the same state as them, it's a pretty impossible task to compete with.
Well, and I'm just wondering why that is. You know, that for all the programs that are going on in our state, when the Waste Management Open rolls into town, 500,000 people come out. When NASCAR plays, people roll out to that. The Cardinals have built a fan base. I think some of their fan base, though, is just people that like the NFL. I wouldn't necessarily say they're Cardinal fans. It's opening day for the Diamondbacks. They're going to sell it out tonight or come close to it. The Suns can be really bad, but the fans will come back and see them. I can go through every sports, and the enigma of every single sports team in our state at the high level, to me, is Arizona State basketball. Because Herb can go out and win 20 games, they're still going to draw 5,500. And I don't know why that is. They can have James Harden out there. You can write great columns about him. And we can cover him, and they're still not going to really have that place where it needs to be. And I don't know how that changes. I don't know what to do with that one. Because everything else here in our state, people gravitate towards when there's a winner.
Well, yeah, and I agree. I mean, it is tricky, and they're competing for that entertainment dollar. And what they're dealing with that a lot of the other teams you mentioned aren't is sort of an equal in the state as far as a college basketball team that's just, you know, 90 miles down the freeway. And so it's just by the mere juxtaposition, I think. They look like the secondary team, and I think that gets into the psyche of people. I think the only solution would be that ASU starts winning consistently, and meaning getting into the tournament year after year after year, and putting together more than just maybe a superstar and a surrounding cast. They need more players, because it really, when you're competing for that entertainment dollar, I think it's really hard to get people. And then the culture, you know, it has been, we've talked about this so many times, ASU has had a really hard time athletically fundraising in the past for all the boosters. You know, mm-hmm. You think about this being the largest university in the country, they and Ohio State going back and forth all the time. The boosters they should have and the alumni that they should be able to tap into should be massive. And for whatever reason, they haven't. So they've never been at the forefront of, you know, the best facilities for basketball and maybe not spend enough money in marketing and promotion. I think that a lot of that has come around, and they're doing a lot better. I think the game experience is much better. The promotions are much better. But for a long time, they weren't doing that very well, and so they're still kind of playing a game of catch-up, I think.
Well, and look, Grand Canyon University has now figured out a way to get 5,500 to the point where they're expanding to 7,500.
Right.
I mean, they're being lapped even locally. So, and they get all upset about this, but facts are facts.
Sure.
And until something changes, and I think what Sean has done down there, yeah, they went through a bad period after Lute left, but now they're right back up, and they're so far ahead of what's going on. That's my point. And anybody who disagrees with that is just not living in reality. So,
yeah,
I mean, it's great for us to get into March Madness. I just want to see the two of these teams really be in a – I don't think they'll ever be Kentucky-Louisville, But it would sure be nice if they were Michigan, Michigan State. It really would be nice.
I agree. I mean, it would be so good for the state, and it's just sort of ASU having to hold up its end of it, having to do better with recruiting, things like that.
Before I let you go, over under 81 for the Diamondbacks as they start the season. Well, they're already down two, but over under on opening day.
I would say under. I just have concerns with this team this year, and part of it is being in the division that they're in and the amount of times they have to play the Dodgers and the Giants, and there's still some question marks with this group. I hope they prove me wrong, but I can't say I've been, you know, overwhelmed with the direction they're heading. I think they made some nice off-season moves, but they still have to answer some questions for me, no question about it.
Stay well. Appreciate your time as always. Thanks.
Good talking to you, Brad.
There's Paula Melvin, News and Notes, AZ Central sports columnist for a couple of minutes. She joins me every Monday on the show, broadcasting live today from the Phoenix Country Club. It's great having the Phoenix Rotary 100 and Salvation Army folks out here, the Second Century Golf Classic. Appreciate them being involved with what we're doing out here today at the Phoenix Country Club. So on the other side, I've got some thoughts on the Diamondbacks, and people complain about the cost of going to a sporting event. And I've got some numbers that will show you that here in Arizona, it's actually a pretty darn good deal. Some other things on my mind before we get through hour number one here as we roll on. Brad Sussmat with you, Sports 360 AZ. On AZ Central Sports, going to be partnered with the Arizona Republic, White Mountain Radio, and on Twitter, at Brad Sussmat.
React and interact to our Facebook question of the day. Like our page at facebook.com/sports360AZ.
Sports 360 AZ, AZ Central Sports on White Mountain Radio and on Twitter. Brad Sussmat from the Phoenix Country Club. It is the Phoenix Rotary 100 Salvation Army Second Century Golf Classic. I want to thank Wells Fargo and Supima Cotton, among others, for supporting what is a great cause out here at the Phoenix Country Club and also the Phoenix Country Club. Jared did a piece on the Phoenix Country Club. What was that, Jared? It was like the week before the Waste Fair. You did some history. On out here, the pictures.
Yeah,
it
was about
stuff.
A week.
Is that about right?
Yeah, it was about a week before the Waste Management Phoenix Open. They had a nice exhibit out about the history of the Phoenix Open, going back to the days where it was held there at Phoenix Country Club, and they had stuff from Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus and some really, really amazing pieces of memorabilia that you just won't find anywhere else. And I, being a local person through and through, born and raised here, I just thought it was fascinating learning a lot more about the Open from the days before it was over at TPC and the 16th hole and all the stuff that it is today. So yeah, it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
And for those of you that want to come by here, you can't. So it's closed. I'm not being elitist here. It's just we're at a private country club, but it's very nice. The Phoenix Country Club guys and gals have been terrific out here. And I appreciate their support and letting us come out here and be a part of this event, too. I do want to say about opening day that I hear people complain about the Diamondbacks and the cost, right? So Team Marketing Report comes out today on opening day with who has the most expensive ballpark to go to watch a game. The average ticket price, the highest average ticket price, is the Boston Red Sox at $52.32. $52 to go sit at a Red Sox game is the average price. The average premium ticket price is $176. That's to go to a Red Sox game. But wait, the Yankees have a cheaper average ticket price, $51. But their premium ticket price is $305. So, hey, we got lots of seats. You can come hang out in lots of seats, but, you know, you're really not going to be in a great seat. But, oh, over here, we have a premium seat for you to sit in. It's $305 at a Yankee game. So that takes me over to the Diamondbacks. The Diamondbacks have the second cheapest ticket price when it comes to average price. It's $17.98 for a ticket to the game. About twice the cost of going to a movie. But the average premium ticket price, there's a difference here, is $52 for the Diamondbacks. That $52, it's cheaper to go to a Braves or Orioles or Brewers or A's or Rockies. I'm looking through the list here. Of the premium seats, the Diamondbacks premium seats are a little bit higher. The Padres have the cheapest tickets by far, $41 for their premium seats, $41 to sit in the best seats in San Diego. So when you go to a Diamondbacks game, yeah, you can get in for less than 20, but if you want a really good seat, it's going to cost you $52. Family of four, we're up to $200. I don't know too many people that go sit in the best seats that take all four. I used to have season tickets to the Diamondbacks. Someday I may have them again, but I'm in a space in life where I found, you know what, I can't even make it to 10 games a year to be a fan. I'll go to three or four, and that's it. The average price of a beer to go to a Diamondbacks game is $4. That's cheaper than the Padres, which is $5. The Indians have a $4 beer. That $4 beer is the cheapest in all of Major League Baseball, so give Derek Hall a lot of credit on that. A soft drink at a baseball game, the Diamondbacks have one for $1.50. The Reds have it for just $1. So $1.50 is the cheapest soda you can get. You want a hot dog? It's only $2.75 at the Diamondbacks game. Of course, you have that, what was that, Gut Bomb, Jared? What was that one that was like, it was like $25?
The D-Bat Dog? Is that what you're talking about?
That that's the one that's,
the bacon and cheese filled corn dog, basically, is what it is. The heart attack on a stick.
Yeah, the one that's going to kill your plumbing in the house forever. I mean, that's just bad. But hey, when you go to the ballpark, absolutely, I'm going to have a Prilosec moment. Come on. But you can get a cheap dog for $2.75. To park at a Diamondbacks game, okay, this one I think is interesting. The highest place to park is at Yankee Stadium. $35 is the price it costs to park for a Yankee game. $27 to go to a baseball game at Fenway to park the car. Diamondbacks game, it's $10. Padres game, it's $8. Tampa Bay, they don't charge to park. Look, I'm in one of those spots where do I think that it's right to ask fans to pay for everything inside and out and that even paying to park a car? That's why I say just go take public transportation. We have a light rail. Have you ever taken a light rail to the game? It's actually kind of fun. It's actually a lot easier to get around by taking the rail. So you do have options. If you're going to complain about the $10, maybe try using public transportation. I don't know. It's just a thought. You don't have to deal with the hassle getting in and out of the ballpark and all that stuff. Let's see. A Diamondback cap, $9.99. That is the cheapest in all of Major League Baseball. You can get a Diamondbacks cap for $9.99. I don't know what kind of cap it is. I have no idea. But all I know is, hey, I got to take my family of four to the game. I want to get both my kids a cap. That's $20 I've got to spend. I want to get both my kids a hot dog. That's $2.75 a piece. That's $5.50. Okay, so $20 for the hat, $5.50 for the hot dog. I got to get each of them a drink. That's $2.75. Okay, so now I'm at, what am I at there? I'm at another five, so I'm at $11. So I'm at $31. I can get them a hat, a hot dog, and a soda for the two combined. That's what, $15.50 a piece? That's pretty good. Of course, some of you will say, that's really expensive, that's an outrage, I don't want to go. They're not going to give it away, but I do think the Diamondbacks try pretty hard to get you into the ballpark. Not everybody's going to sit in the $52.14 seat for tonight. Jared is going to have a free seat tonight. Doesn't mean you need to hate on Jared. He's going there to work. But on opening day, I think it's one of those deals where you walk in and you're going to have that moment. Have you covered opening days before, Jared? I forget.
Yeah, I've covered the last two. I've covered the last two, actually.
All right. And do you feel the sense of optimism because you've grown up here, or do you look at the team and say, oh, my gosh, when's football season going to get here because this isn't going to go well?
No, I'm worried that this team's going to be 500 again. That's where I'm at because I don't see much improvement from past seasons, but I don't see this team being much worse than past seasons. You know, I see their starting rotation being very underwhelming. I don't see anyone that can come out or a two- or three-game stretch where you can just see this team dominate from a pitching standpoint for a three-game series. And I don't see this hitting being good enough top to bottom to out-hit everyone every game. And one thing that Kevin Towers talked about with sending D.D. Gregorius down instead of having him up and having Chris Owings up instead is because part of it was because they need the better bat in the lineup because they're going to need to out-hit teams instead of beating them with pitching. He basically said that. He said, I don't not have confidence in my pitching, but he said we could use the extra bat, especially at the beginning of the year. So that right there should tell you where the problem with this team is. So I unfortunately seeing it being another 500 team, which is really a buzzkill.
Yeah. Well, here's the part of it I don't get. And I know that there's going to be those that say, Brad, they sent Archie Bradley down because they can control the contract. I don't know. When you have Brandon McCarthy as your opening day starting pitcher, even though it's your third game of the year already, that's a little underwhelming to me. There is a side of showmanship and marketing. If you don't think Archie Bradley is ready to pitch, that's one thing. But anybody who saw Archie Bradley pitch in spring training and you don't believe he's ready to go, if you think throwing him out there for opening day against the Giants is going to be too much of a moment for him, I don't know. I mean, being the opening day guy for Reno, the Aces, versus, hey, we believe so strongly in you, and fans, we believe so strongly in him. Do you see where I'm coming on this? I think that there's got to be a little bit of something there. To tell me that he's not ready, come on. Come on. But if it's we control him for another year, and you have to understand our options and all that stuff, yeah, there is that side of it, too. I just think, in this case, to get people really jacked up about tonight, It's not like the days where they had Randy and Kurt out there. I get it. But maybe Brandon McCarthy finally comes through. I just kind of feel like by mid-May we're going to be sitting here wondering about this manage. Not even wondering. By the end of April, I'm going to be sitting here. If this team is 8-14, I know internally it's not going to be good down there.
Brad, one thing that I found was interesting because I had the opportunity to do a one-on-one interview with Mike Bell, who's their director of player development. And one thing he mentioned with Bradley and also some of their other young pitchers is sometimes when you want these guys to continue the success that they had from the previous season, you put them in a similar environment to try to continue that success and then move them up so they could just kind of get their feet wet and they can move along. And I thought that was just really interesting. So that partially could have been the reason why they put Bradley in the minors, just so they can have him in a position where he can be successful and comfortable. And then once he gets back to the shape that he was in last year, where he was absolutely dominant, then maybe they flirt with the idea of calling him up. So I don't know if that pertains to him, but I know that pertains to a lot of the pitchers that had a lot of success last season.
Well, I just think that I don't get a sense around town that there's a good feel about this. And part of it is the Dodgers. But part of it is you've got to get off to a good start and put to bed all this stuff about you can give the guy an extension, but as the owner, as I've covered this owner is not going to be one that is going to be content to be sitting there if a team is 8-16 or something along those lines. And they're already at 0-2, and there's already a feel of like, my gosh, how many of these guys are we going to lose with arm trouble here? Is there something inherent within the system here that we have to look at? So there's just a lot of intrigue to me about, and I don't like saying, okay, let's turn our attention to football. I'm on the Mark Cuban line on that there's already enough guys that say, well, baseball season, who cares? It's kind of something to do to kill time before we get to the NFL draft and all that stuff. The Cardinals will have their time. Arizona State will have its time. U of A will have their time on the football field. I want this football team to be relevant. I don't want them to be in a spot where we're sitting here after 6 weeks saying, boy, they're bad, let's move on to the next sport. And that's what happens here in Arizona. Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports, White Mountain Radio on Twitter, at Brad Sussmath. Thanks for being with us. Plenty of content up on AZ Central Sports and, of course, on Sports360AZ, White Mountain Radio, and on Twitter. Stay with us.